So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
I think I lost my Fitbit. I'm pissed.
Oh no!
It's so fucking small, man.
Oh no!
I fell off somewhere, dude. It was $100.
Are you supposed to wear that?
Yeah, it was clipped onto my fucking
shit,
pants. I think it fell off.
Now somebody's gonna mess up your record, man.
I'm gonna know if someone gets it because it's synced on my phone.
Oh yeah, somebody's gonna walk and then you'll see where they are. So does it track everywhere that you go?
No, it just tracks how much I walk, but not where it is.
Well, you'll know how much the thief has walked.
He's in better shape than me.
Booker, I want to have sex with your wife.
What the hell are you doing here? Kirk, get out now!
Shut up!
Now, get out!
And I'm not just talking any kind of sex with your wife. That kind of bestiality sex. I've been told to issue an apology for my actions last week. So Booker, Charmel, for the anguish I put you both through, I apologize. However, I want Charmel to admit that she is a gutter slut. Charmel, did you tell Booker? Did you tell him why you were screaming? It wasn't because I was beating the hell out of you, Book. She was screaming because she wanted more. Your wife, she molested me. She fondled my privates. And what's more, we both loved it. Booker, I'm gonna break your ankle. And Charmel, after I dominate your husband, I'm gonna give you exactly what you want. And that's dominate you.
Sometimes I run. Sometimes I hide. Sometimes I'm scared of you. But all I really want is to hold you tight. Treat you right. Be with you day and night. Baby, all I need is time.
Welcome to Review Away. It's John Pollock and Wei Ting. How are you doing, Wei?
Doing good.
Oh, so good.
You sound healthy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How can you tell how healthful I sound?
Well, you're not pressing mute on your microphone constantly and hacking up a storm.
Oh, I see.
How has the 0937 virus traveled through you? Has it left? Is it in the rearview mirror?
Let me see.
Oh, stop it. Someone just turned off the show. Disgusting.
I think that was the last of it.
Okay.
It just stuck in
that was the death of the virus right there.
Stuck in my throat right here. Yeah. But I have a feeling that, yes, I am the creator and originator of the 0937 virus, but I have a sneaking suspicion that it is not what Kurt Bauer, our friend, is suffering from. I really do wonder.
You keep bringing up this. Almost like you feel this guilt on your shoulders, or has Court placed this on you?
I mean, you
have clarified about three times that you feel Court is exaggerating this or blaming the wrong source.
Yes, I do feel that way because, I mean, as much as I would like to take credit for this completely debilitating thing that's been sending Court Bauer to the hospital. Court
went to the hospital?
Went to the hospital, was diagnosed with stomach virus and pneumonia, and my symptoms were not nearly that bad. So as much as I would like to take credit for it, I am not the source of these germs that have infiltrated his biology.
His biology. You know what is some bad news?
What's that?
I'm afraid I've got some bad news for myself. This coming up Friday, you and I are going to be at a MMA event in Toronto. Substance Cage Combat.
Yes.
You're going to be shooting this? I'm
going to
be the roving reporter, interviewing guys, and I believe you and I have to go to the weigh-ins on Thursday night. Have you been informed of this?
No, I knew about this, yeah.
Are you aware what Thursday is?
Oh, TNA.
No. I will say more importantly than that. It's the final Thursday of the month.
So?
I'm going to miss testing.
Oh, shit.
Damn. I have put in my attendance for this month has been damn near stellar.
Yeah.
I missed one class.
I think you've done better than me this month.
And I all of a sudden realized that these two things I will say this. I contacted a former TNA wrestler last week.
We're talking about jiu-jitsu, by the way.
Yes, jiu-jitsu.
Open Mat MMA.
At Open Mat, and at the end of the month, they do testing. And I'll say I've been on point, I think, this month.
You've been great.
Hip tosses. We've been doing escape from guard, all this stuff. Side control into an arm bar. And now I feel like I've put in all this work, and I'm going to miss the testing.
No, don't feel that way. Please don't feel that way, because you have that information within you. Just because you're not getting tested on it doesn't mean you don't have it.
That's true. I need to look at it from a deeper perspective. But just to enhance my dedication this month, as I mentioned, I was talking to a former TNA wrestler and wanted to interview them. And I do really need an agenda to keep track of all the stuff that's going on, because I said, hey, are you available Thursday for an interview? Flexible on time. And they came back to me and said, sure, can we do Thursday night around 6 till 9, sometime in there? And I'm like, oh, Thursday night. And then I remembered, I replied, I said, listen, I have a jiu-jitsu class at night that I cannot miss. Can we do the interview the Wednesday?
Yes.
And they did not get back to me. I don't think they were amused by my shuffling of this. So that guest probably will not be joining us anytime soon.
It's only TNA.
But I put them ex-TNA. They saw the... they saw the writing on the wall. And so, I have put this testing very high, and now all of a sudden this event comes out of nowhere.
I feel bad. I feel terrible for you. Are you sure these weigh-ins are that late? What time are they?
I believe we have to be there at 6, which is right when the class is.
Oh, no.
I believe.
If you really wanted, you can get a private and they'll test you then, but I don't think you want to do that. I don't think you care that much.
When you go on Saturdays to Open Mat,
yeah,
is it? Do you go and are you in a class or are you just
it's a
rolling?
Class. Oh, it's a class. It's a it's sometimes it's a class, but most of the times during the weeknights. I mean, there are classes, but then there's this thing that they just recently implemented called black belt training, which is just sort of a thing they like to call basically free rolling, but it's set or free drilling.
Yeah,
it's
I've
just
seen
like
those
space.
Listings.
But it's structured, so they time five minutes for each person. You pair it with somebody, and one person gets 5 minutes to do whatever they've been working on, whatever they've seen on YouTube that they wanted to try, whatever they picked up and wanted to drill, and then the next person gets the other 5 minutes, and you just kind of...
Is the other guy fully resisting or going 50%?
Whatever you want. Oh. Whatever you ask for. And then you do that for an hour, and then the last hour is all rolling, and that's been really beneficial, especially having done a couple competitions and studying a lot of footage and now knowing exactly what I need to work on. It's been very beneficial for me.
Wow. What I most want to improve upon, first of all, I need to get some more strength. I'm very weak.
Oh, I feel the same way.
I'm enlisting my good both of our friend Ed, who's a personal trainer.
No way!
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
I heard you today talking about it. And
Let's lift.
He's coming to. He's putting together a whole plan for me. I said, listen, I need to put on some muscle, and I also find when I'm rolling at the end of class, you go 2 minutes on top, 2 minutes on bottom, and you're trying to essentially escape or submit the guy. And my God, am I just gassed by the end of it. I don't feel like I'm in phenomenal shape. I'm certainly in better shape having doing this, at least on a semi-regular basis.
That'll totally come, especially if you keep on with this routine, John. And the other thing is that I've always heard, and I'm still a beginner myself, so I can't, there are other people that can speak a lot more to this. But, when you're starting out, you don't necessarily know how to how much you're breathing or where exactly to put your strength. And so you might be exerting even more energy.
I probably am.
Than you necessarily need to. The other thing is that, I've heard, I'm sure some type of strength regimen will be beneficial no matter what. But I've heard some people say that it's not even as necessary, especially at the lower levels, because at the lower levels, they just recommend, focusing a lot more on technique if you have a limited amount of time to devote.
When we do these, we've been doing hip throws throughout the month,
like a judo hip throw.
Yeah, very much so. Where essentially you're putting your arm around the guy's waist, and then you're grabbing their bicep, and then you're basically standing, like you're positioning your feet right in front of theirs, and you lean over and hoist them on your back and toss them over. And when you do it perfectly, like it's
effortless.
It's exactly like it wouldn't matter if I was 50 pounds. And that to me is the beauty of it. When you can have technique over power.
Oh yeah,
it's incredible. Like just tossing a guy just with imbalancing him.
That's the whole thing, man. That's the beauty of martial arts. That's the beauty of judo. It's a science. It really is. It's purely science. You know,
this is the furthest from how we're gonna be describing some of the matches on this Judgment Day card.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of technique involved in that I Quit match as
with the smokestack.
With the smokestack as John Cena. Irish.
Sometimes power is better than technique.
Yeah. But there's some technique in lifting a car door off of its hinges, I'm sure.
Now, for those of you that follow Wei on Instagram or Facebook, you will see the picture he put up of what we now call the day John Cena came by the Fight Network after Judgment Day 2005.
Yes.
And we're going to hear from John Cena just mere days after this I Quit match, which I will go so far as to say was, up until that point, was the best match of John Cena's career.
This was a very good match.
There's nothing before this that stands out. But, and we reviewed about 2 months ago JBL and John Cena's WrestleMania match, which was pretty bad.
This was pretty much a sort of like a rematches from WrestleMania that year. WrestleMania Goes Hollywood. And we saw that rematch, of course, and also the Eddie Guerrero Rey Mysterio rematch.
Right, with pretty much just kind of more of a clear delineation between a babyface and a heel with Rey and Eddie. And we'll get into that. But we'll hear from John Cena. And do you know who we will also hear from over the course of the next hour?
No clue.
The man who was the first one to leave us feedback for the show back in 2005 on The Law that night, Dave Meltzer, will be with us to share his thoughts on Judgment Day 2005.
Awesome.
Yes.
Great.
So lots of...
I wonder if his opinions would have changed since then. Like, are we putting an inaccurate opinion of Dave's out here, a dated opinion of Dave's?
No, I would say this would be the most honest opinion because it was right after the fact.
Your first impressions aren't necessarily the most honest, you know.
Well, that was his impression. Dave is free to go back and watch any pay-per-view and join us any week.
He won't. He doesn't have time.
Dave Meltzer doesn't have time to go back and watch. Sometimes I wonder, it's like, man, we put so much time into going back and watching things that have no relevance to today. Could you imagine Dave Meltzer just popping in Super Brawl 3 to watch for the hell of it?
I think
unless there was some connection to today that would benefit his writing.
I could see him doing that, though. You know, maybe like over dinner, nothing else to do, pop on the WWE Network.
I just feel he has such a regimented schedule that it would be hard to work in a 3-hour pay-per-view into his schedule.
You should ask him this Sunday.
This Sunday? Maybe. Yeah. I only have him for a few...
You call him every,
I only have seconds
day.
Before he goes on the air. I don't really have much...
Call him a little earlier and have a chat. I guess... I'd love to talk.
Yeah, well, I don't have the waiting chats with him.
No, you don't. But you can have the Marcin Held chat.
Yeah, we could discuss
have
lead
you ever,
blocks.
Did you talk to him about that?
No, I didn't.
Dave Meltzer, for people who weren't aware, sent out the funniest tweet after the Bellator pay-per-view the other day where he just tweets... After the Bellator pay-per-view had ended, is it just me or does Marcin Held look a lot like at I Am John Pollock?
Or is my brain short-circuiting?
Yeah, and Marcin Held is a Bellator fighter and he does look just like you.
I guess I never looked at, I've watched so many of that guy's fights. I'm actually a big fan of Marcin Held, but never put the two together that I look like him.
I will say AJ from Tough Enough, though, is still probably the closest... Closest to your doppelganger that I've ever seen.
Who would yours be?
Oh, come on.
Oh, maybe this is a question for the message board. Who is Wei Ting's doppelganger without being offensive and just putting any random Asian person in wrestling or MMA?
This will turn out to be perhaps the most offensive question you've ever asked.
Maybe someone will post Orlando Jordan.
No, even that would be silly. But it's funny, a related story, and we'll get to this review eventually. But my friend Farah actually was at a store, like a hat store.
This is a great story.
And saw this dude who actually looked just like me. And I'm not talking, oh, yeah, he's an Asian guy.
No, it was uncanny.
Like, we had almost the same eyes, you know, same facial structure. Uh-oh, special guest joining us. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Hey, what's going on? What's going on, Damian Abraham?
Nothing much, sir. How are you doing?
Just hanging out with Wei. We're actually about to we're actually just about to record this week's show.
What's up, Damian?
Oh, hey, how's it going, Wei?
Pleasure to have you on.
I can be in right now. I'm gonna come on. Let's do a show.
What would you like to review next time you come on?
I don't know. Like, When's the Ring of Honor pay-per-view's like next week, right? Or like in the
No, it's not till June 22nd.
If you think we can do, maybe get something done before that, maybe do some ROH.
All right, you want to do ROH in 2 weeks?
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Because we pick something for next Monday, but 2 Mondays from now, let's why don't you pick something out and we'll do it.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
Any ROH show in history.
Any ROH show ever?
Yes, anyone.
Man. And then I wonder, can we get any show?
We'll be able to find it. Like, I'm sure.
Let me look at what I have, and you have stuff on DVD, don't you?
I have a couple DVDs too. Yeah, and like, you know, I'm sure there's like odd.
Why don't you look something up that you want to do, and then me and Wei will find a means to track it down.
We have like most of their shows here at the Fight Network from like.
Yeah, when we had a deal with them, they sent us so many of their shows. So odds are, if it's from 2004 through 2006, we probably have it.
All
right.
That would be wicked. I'd love to do that.
Hey, how was MLW?
It was 3 hours.
Wow. Are they airing it all at once this Sunday?
I mean, I'm going to break it up and put them on MLW VIP and stuff.
I heard that you got the greatest introduction of all time.
I got a pretty awesome intro. It was amazing, too, because, like, he's like, yeah, like, I don't really, Conan's like, I don't really like punk. It's all, like, this, like, white boy shit. You know, like, and I'm like, well, actually, Conan, there is a disproportionate number of white kids into punk in some cities, but you haven't heard of the Latino punk? And so I gave him, like, the entire history of punk.
And you won him over.
I think so. Wow. And also, I think we got plans to hang out in real life in San Diego now.
Oh, in real life. Wow. That's awesome.
IRL.
Oh, well, that's awesome, man. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm going to book a day off work to download it and listen to it.
Awesome. Well, and as I told John Wei, I didn't get sick, so I don't know what's
going on. Yeah, that's what we were just talking about.
Weak immune system.
Yeah, Wei was just telling me. Court was had to go to the hospital. Got pneumonia.
Yeah, pneumonia.
Had pneumonia. Yeah, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, he's putting the blame on me.
Jim Ross.
Hey, you know who I do? I do blame Sneaky D's, Damien. He said he got a stomach virus. So it could have been the whatever the fucked up taco that he had.
He didn't have a fucked up taco, Wei. Don't play trying to put this on my van.
All right, what?
Our menu item wasn't ordered.
Whatever taco, the Arcade Fire taco.
If you were the fucked up taco, he'd be feeling awesome now. He would have put on 20 pounds of muscle.
That is true. That's what I'll have.
Yeah, that's how we roll.
Well,
I won't keep you guys because I know you got to get to work. But
this is our work.
Keep up the good work. I listen to every show, so I'm waiting with bated breath for Wednesday for this one.
Awesome. Okay. Well, we will. Okay. 2 weeks from today, we will do ROH.
Awesome, buddy. Okay.
Talk to you soon, Damian.
Bye.
Later.
Damian Abraham, ladies and gentlemen.
You never know who's going to join. The people that downloaded this podcast getting a sneak preview 2 weeks in advance to what we are going to be reviewing. But you're going to have to stick around till the end of the show to find out what we're chatting about next week.
Yeah. Wow. I can't believe it. It's like. The people that, like, we still get people that complain to us every once in a while about how long we talk until the review actually starts. That person is going to get really upset this time.
To me, it's like if you, whatever. Yeah, everyone, you can complain if you want.
But you know what? Like,
I don't take that as negative.
I would get pissed off Sure. And I would respond. Like, I would totally change up the format of the show. But the thing is, anytime somebody like that responds, there are way more people that like it, that come out saying that they prefer us to do this way.
As long as people respond, I'm happy. Sometimes I wonder with the MMA report. I never hear from people. Sometimes I wonder if I'm just talking into a microphone and anyone's listening at the other end.
I mean, I feel like
I get responses, you know, but nothing to this degree like we do for this show.
Yeah, I mean, and I will say, like, the Law brand is probably, I mean, it's a pro wrestling brand. It's a
great brand.
Yeah.
Great brand.
Man, on Monday was Memorial Day in the U.S.
Correct.
And I saw a tweet from Cinnabon.
Oh, no. What did they fucking say on Memorial Day?
At
it's going to be tasteless.
This is at Cinnabon.
Oh, no.
No, it wasn't sweet. Enjoy the sweet things in life today and remember those who made sacrifices for us to enjoy them. With a photo of Cinnabon.
God.
Look at this.
That's what are some of the comments to that tweet?
Oh, mine was seriously.
Oh, you replied.
what the hell?
Sorry.
The most of the comments were just Esther Lynn says, almost as strange as SpaghettiOs Veterans Day campaign.
Is that a real thing?
I have no idea. A lot of it was just like, you know, thank goodness. I wasn't going to celebrate Memorial Day until I realized what they were fighting for.
Jesus.
And, yeah, just a lot of people telling them to fire their intern, their social media intern.
That was not a social media intern, I don't suspect.
Yeah.
God, that's something else.
I'm sure they had
something. What did you write? You said you responded?
I just retweeted. That's all.
Have you still been tracking local Toronto media?
What?
After your big attack of one Toronto Sun reporter.
No.
Keeping your eye on the Toronto media?
No, I don't care. No, I wasn't doing that. Anyway. Sorry, let's go on. I'm even bored now of our banter.
All right, well, we're going to move on. This was a significant pay-per-view. Do you know why?
No.
I believe this was the last pay-per-view that was the pre-waiting member of the Law era.
I don't know about that.
I think so. You started like in...
Oh, okay.
This would have been right when first year, right. Second year ended.
Right.
And I remember you started in June.
Yeah. This was right when I... On my first day of interning at the Fight Network, I think... I don't even know how it
happened. Were you there the day John Cena came in?
No.
Okay, you weren't. So you hadn't started yet.
Yeah. But on the first day that I came in, I was an intern straight. I mean, I was still in school at the time, as were you. But you were already hired full time. And I don't know what happened, but somebody couldn't. Like, for some reason, Jay couldn't make the show or Mouth couldn't make the show 1 week. Was that what happened?
What, when you got moved in?
Yeah.
What they did was... basically, it was like everyone got rotated where Dan and Jay were now co-hosting and I was moved as the board op from call screening. So we needed a call screening.
And who was the board op before?
Jay was doing both at the same time.
And he just moved
there
up.
Was an issue with logger sheets that Jay can tell you.
I gotcha.
And then so essentially we needed an extra body.
Yeah.
So that Dan and Jay could handle just hosting and I would be – because I wasn't really part of the show in terms of any kind of hosting capacity.
And our former general manager just said, hey, how about this guy? He's a wrestling fan.
He literally walked out into the room and just saw Way first and pointed to him.
Yeah.
And how weird would this have been if it could have been me and it could have been Review Amore would have been this show had it Sheffield. Been a different person that he pointed to or something.
It could have been Maury. Yeah, you're right. But no, I think he knew – he chose me because I had said to him that I knew the show. I knew the Law and that's how I knew about the Fight Network actually. And I don't know. I actually chatted with him about like Misawa and stuff and Japanese wrestling. So I think he
with BS.
Yeah, with BS. Yeah.
Oh wow.
So yeah. So then this guy. So Brian Sobey. BS. Whatever. Brian Sobey. Yeah, he's my former boss, and he suggested me. He got me on the Law, and then John, his face was just like. That guy? Are you sure?
Don't even
say
that.
Yeah,
you had absolutely not.
You had a clear look of hesitation. a clear look of oh my God, really? That guy? That quiet dude? That quiet Asian dude?
I don't think so.
Does he even speak English?
What was your impression of me when you started working? Did you and I even talk?
We didn't talk that much, man.
No, I don't
because
think
you're
so.
Just kind of
like we had met by this point, obviously in school.
We had yes, because
we had our famous interaction.
Yeah, the John Pollock when I was starstruck in class, but we never really interacted at all until you sent out the call for interns and I responded to that to our school mailing list, and then we just kind of
hired three
just
of
said
you.
Hi, yeah,
I remember specifically telling them. Get this, because we got quite a lot of people that applied, and we only were bringing in three interns. And I told them, bring this guy in. Like, he follows the show. He'd be perfect for this.
I remember my internship meeting. We'll eventually get to this review, but this is more interesting.
Who was your interview with? Brad?
Not with Brad. It was this guy Russell, who was only there temporarily. I don't know if you remember.
I don't remember.
He was only
Russell.
There temporarily until he moved to Insight. Anyway, he was there, and his questions were like, he asked me a bunch of TV questions, of course, but then like his wrestling related questions were like, do you know what a suplex is?
Oh, Jesus Christ. Like, what relevance is that to what I will be doing?
No, no. The thing is, he just wanted to know that
I was a fan.
That's
where you interrupt him and say, it's actually pronounced a souple.
Yeah, yeah. That's when I pulled up my big book of wrestling moves that I had printed out, all 10,000 moves. And I told him.
This is my ranking when I played Fire Pro Wrestling.
Exactly. But no, that, like, I mean, at that point, it was just like. Yeah, I know what a suplex is, you know.
Isn't that hilarious to look like in hindsight now that, like, you're like one of the wrestling people now. Like, people look at you like as an authority now. And this guy who was interviewing you probably couldn't tell you anything.
Well, yeah.
Anything that you don't know.
The thing that we've always kind of learned here at the Fight Network is we work with a bunch of very talented people, people that are usually talented, like very talented in producing TV, but they're typically people that have come from like a real sports background, like,
sure.
You know, covering actual sports, not pro wrestling. And so, you know, basically any kind of boss we've ever dealt with, they don't really know all that much about, you know, pro wrestling, and for that matter, even MMA, it's always kind of relied on, you know, you or I or you know, some of the other on-air talent here to kind of, or especially the younger people, to kind of, like, you know, be the authorities about these sports themselves. So it's not unusual.
No, I always thought it was smart to, when we would interview people, to, I mean, there was one guy that used to work with us who, when he would interview interns, he'd kind of roll through like a champions list of UFC, like name who is the champion at the heavyweight division, light heavyweight, and wanted people that were at least familiar with this stuff, which for any kind of job that you're going into, you should be well versed in that.
It's absolutely important. Yeah.
I once had a job interview to be a sideline reporter for the Toronto Argonauts, and I didn't end up getting the job, but my God, like, believe me, as you know, I'm not a football guy, but. For those 2 weeks preparing for that thing, I learned the CFL inside and out. I was talking about the starting fucking lines for the Argonauts and stuff. And,
yeah.
Because they quizzed me on that stuff. They wanted to know that you know your football stuff.
Exactly. And it's not even so much that, oh, okay, shit, I don't like the stuff. I was never a fan for years. But the fact that if you're going in for a potential job, the fact that you would at least do a bit of research to prepare yourself like you did for a job like that, I think is what people are looking for. Not necessarily lifelong fans, but at least somebody who went through the steps to take this seriously.
Like, what day did Judgment Day 2005 take place on? What do you think it was?
I don't think I'd be working here.
Guess the date.
May 26th, 2005.
22nd, very close.
Okay.
Yeah, very close. From Minneapolis, Minnesota, at the Target Center. You watch this on the network, I presume?
Yes.
This one started with a warning.
Yeah.
Not violence, not language, simply a warning for sexual content.
TVMA.
Wow, TVMA.
Yeah,
which, there was nothing close to resembling nudity on this show, but completely warranted, I would say, this warning.
Come on. Any mentions of bestial sex?
Bestiality sex.
It would automatically be a MA.
Which we have a funny story regarding later on this show.
It's funny, though. I wonder if that line wasn't in there, what this would be rated just with all the copious amounts of blood.
Yeah, there was no, like, warnings of violence. No. And this was a violent show, especially in that main event. Yeah. One of the most graphic bloodbaths I can recall in a WWE set.
Yeah, yeah.
Ever.
It would be G.
This was just common.
G, maybe.
So the show kicks off with an opening video on the evil Eddie Guerrero, who has since turned completely heel against Rey Mysterio. And
remind me what their characters were in WrestleMania.
Well, if you recall, they were the tag champions at the time, and they were going to have a singles match with one another where they were both still baby faces.
Right, right.
Rey gets the win, and it would continue with Eddie just getting jealous that he cannot beat Rey. And it would turn into one of the most successful television programs that ever happened on SmackDown. Maybe the most successful when it came to television numbers they drew. Kurt Angle and Booker T. One of the most overlooked feuds in WWE history.
I don't know how I've not heard of this.
How have we been doing this for close to 5 years, mm-hmm. and we've waited until now to review this feud?
Hidden gem.
Boy. It just features one of the great sound-ups of all time. I want to have sex with your wife, Booker.
Which they abused. It's not like they just, oh, no, this is unfortunate. This guy said that. Let's hide it. No, they highlighted it and used it in all the video packages. I want to have sex with your wife.
Kurt Angle. And then the I Quit match with Cena and JBL. Those are your three focused matches. Michael Cole and Taz were on commentary. I will say I'm going to give a thumbs up to both men on this show.
Me too.
Michael Cole, and this guy, it just feels he has always been just buried by people. He was very good on this show. Mm-hmm. I mean, he had no Twitter shit to plug. He had nothing that he had to plug. And I've been really critical about how the commentary, they're supposed to be storytellers, but I don't feel that they do a great job of that in a lot of these segments. On this show, he got the storytelling aspects across really well.
Yeah.
I thought Michael Cole was really good, and Taz as well.
Yeah, I feel like we say this a lot about, you know, this era of SmackDown shows featuring Cole and Taz, because it is a real contrast to what they are like today, both of them. I mean, Cole right now, like you said, having to plug the network, having to plug Tout, whatever, every few minutes.
And the chemistry of Cole, JBL, and Lawler, it
sucks.
It's become like three guys drinking, watching wrestling at home. You know what I mean?
Which can be amusing.
It can be, but not for 3 hours.
And not when you have to get storylines across.
It's just like, it's just trying to make the other guy laugh. That's their chemistry right now.
Mystery Science Theater.
Yeah. And Tanay and Taz have a lot of that too, where they're just trying to joke with one another.
Well, all the time. That's the thing. Taz right now is, he's just making bad jokes. He's just kind of playing the goofy uncle, it feels like. Whereas on this show, he was a source of basically the technical expertise. He was able to call all these STFs, all these things that Cole obviously doesn't know. So he fulfilled that role, and Cole did a great job at carrying storylines as well.
So the show kind of just starts off cold with Eminem coming out alongside Melina. No, like, big pyro to start the show or anything like that. Just right into it. Melina comes out with Nitro and Mercury. They had recently just debuted on television and won the tag titles.
They won – how early did they win them?
It would have been, like, weeks into their debut because they came up, I think, right after WrestleMania. And they showed the highlights here. They won it in England, which was usually their post-WrestleMania – UK tour. So pretty quickly, Melina calls this the biggest night in pay-per-view history, factually incorrect, and says that they are hotter than anyone to ever walk the red carpet in Hollywood, and they proceed to do their entrance, which was I guess also more sexual content here. This was Melina's pre-PG entrance, where she could wear a skirt for her entrance,
mm-hmm.
which maybe Rebel's been watching her Melina tapes in terms of how to best center your vagina for the cameras.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a whole psychology to it, Wade.
I know.
So Eminem took on the tag team that I, believe me, never recall teaming together. Mm-hmm. Hardcore Holly and Charles Haas for the tag titles. There's a period of time and a lot of this undercard, zero recollection of any of these feuds or some of these teams even existing.
Why would these two choose each other? What would they have in common?
The letter H?
Haas. They just went alphabetical?
Hardcore Haas.
Okay. Haasley.
Haasley. Haul-ass.
All right, at least just start the show.
Oh, boy. I hope someone else calls.
This has been terrible.
Say what you will about this cold tag team that just felt like a makeshift. Not a bad match.
Yeah.
Haas bridges out of... Now I'm just thinking of Haul-ass. Haas bridges out of a submission and arm drags Nitro into the ropes. And then Holly gets tagged in, hits that great drop kick he had, and then delivering these big chops that the crowd got into. Nitro stops an Alabama slam attempt and super kicks Holly as Eminem gets the advantage. Holly finally gets a full Nelson slam. The crowd was chanting Holly.
Yeah.
A chant for Hardcore Holly.
I don't think that's unusual.
Oh, my gosh.
You know what? Of the two of them, I'll say, like, here's the thing. This team seemingly has no reason to exist. I don't know what the storyline was, but I just don't see. They don't wear matching tights. I don't see them even hanging out. I just didn't see much character in the team at all. But what you did have going for it was Hardcore Holly, who's always had
underrated
this,
guy, I
yeah,
feel.
And he has this, at this point in his career, just sort of like a tough, old grizzle veteran persona. And I think, you know, that still resonates a lot.
Haas hits a spear, sends both members of Eminem to the floor, and then hit a tope over the top for a big spot. Haas then knocks Mercury into Molina, who got onto the apron. There's a pair of near falls on Mercury. Holly then gets sent into the post while Haas is the legal man, and Eminem is able to double-team Haas after draping him on the top rope, neck first, and they hit the snapshot, which is where they lift him onto the shoulders and then hit him with a DDT in midair and pin him at 8:05. I like this as an opener. It was the crowd got into Haas and Holly, and Eminem was a team that... I mean, clicked pretty well, and yeah. Especially Johnny Nitro, who, when he was first out of Tough Enough, this dude was the drizzling shits, and he turned into a good worker at one point in time. Yeah. Knew his strengths, certainly had his weaknesses, but this tag team, a perfect way to bring him up where he was hidden until they separated them.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think, you know, Molina being there as the mouthpiece, they seem like a very good fit, the three of them. A very good opener. Crowd was into the whole thing. Very strong.
Then they air a video between another forgotten feud involving The Big Show and Carlito, which apparently took place. Carlito tried to hire The Big Show as a bodyguard, but Big Show turned him down. Then Big Show stole Carlito's apple, ate the apple, but the apple was poisoned and forced Big Show down to his knees. How I long to see this segment in its entirety.
Yeah.
Big Show, what an idiot. This looked like the dumbest angle. The Big Show grabs the apple to spit it in Carlito's face, and he ends up, like, fainting.
He started vomiting, man.
Was there vomit?
Yeah, or at least spitting the apple out. It looked disgusting.
Pound for pound, the shittiest storylines were reserved for Big Show. He's had some god-awful ones.
I'd say Kane, probably.
This is coming off his epic match with Aki Bono at WrestleMania, where he was in the thong.
Not a good era for the Big Show.
No. But it led to a match. Carlito, with his new bodyguard, Matt Morgan, who was doing a stuttering gimmick at the time, which, shockingly, didn't get over, against the Big Show.
Why would they do that?
A stuttering gimmick?
Yeah.
I have no clue. Did nothing for this guy.
Is it because they just decided he couldn't talk and so...
No, the problem was when he was in OVW, Jim Cornette was raving about this guy as one of the best talkers that has come through OVW.
Mm-hmm.
So they bring him up and decide that, okay, this guy who's been, his notes are, good promo, let's give him a stuttering gimmick. And, I mean, it's always their idea that, okay, well, we're going to give them an obstacle that they're going to have to overcome and...
What?
This to me, this is just
what kind of an idea is that?
Well, that's look how many guys that they've done stuff like that for.
Is that not just an excuse for maybe some really bad ideas?
Well, in the big picture, I mean, sure, that might be some philosophy that works for some, but a stuttering gimmick? Death.
You know what would really help Roman Reigns get to the main event level?
If he wore a mask and covered up his body and had to talk every week.
Stuttered.
Yeah.
If he had a stuttering gimmick.
Reigns.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those R's too? Holy Christ. Mm-hmm. Could be terrible. And shockingly, 2 months after this pay-per-view, Matt Morgan was cut.
I don't know if that jet black goatee and hair worked out for him either.
None of this worked. Matt Morgan, unfortunately, is someone that I think will go down in history as someone who had potential and never realized that potential.
Yeah.
Carlito gets on the microphone, says he was talking to his good friend Randy Moss, who warned him about Minnesota, and Moss left the Minnesota Vikings because the people were not cool, and says people laugh at Morgan because he's different. And Morgan gives him an odd look, thinking he's referring to his stuttering, but says it's because he is bigger, stronger, and tougher than everyone in the audience combined. Big Show comes out, match begins, Carlito's stalling, Show eventually gets a hold of him, chops him down. Morgan hits Big Show from the floor, but Big Show no-sells it. It's all Big Show until Morgan pulls down the top rope and Big Show crashes to the floor. Big Show then recovers. He's overpowering Carlito, manhandling him, hits an avalanche in the corner. But then he Irish whips Carlito into referee Brian Hebner, who goes down. And there is a low blow after Big Show goes for the choke slam. Big Show goes up for another choke slam, but Matt Morgan runs in, attacks the Big Show, lifts him up, and hits him with an F5. And Carlito gets the fluke win at 4:42. And I don't know if it was just because they were in Minnesota, which, you know, Brock Lesnar very much attached to or what, but this was really designed just to really get Matt Morgan over. But, yep. I mean, this guy really had no legs after this. This was maybe the high point of this run with the WWE for him.
It did its job, gave Matt Morgan the impressive visual. But in the end, I mean, the F5, it was cool, but it didn't look as good as Brock's. And so it just kind of made you feel like this was sort of a cheaper knockoff of Brock Lesnar.
Then there was a video on Angle and Booker. And what a video package this was. You heard highlights of it at the top of the show.
Explain this to me.
Well, let's go through this feud because it was very complex.
What would drive a man to stalk another woman?
Well, a fatal four-way matchway where the winner would get a title shot. And it came down to both eliminating each other in the fatal four-way due to chair shots. And this began Angle's obsession with Booker's wife, Charmel, who he referred to as a gutter slut.
How does one flow
become
into
a gutter
other?
Slut?
No. How does interfering in a fatal four-way match make somebody obsessed with your wife?
Maybe his I don't know why. Maybe a WWE championship was so prized in Angle's mind that the next best thing was, what would a man covet at the same level of his wife? Okay. A championship.
All right.
So it leads to Angle, during a TV segment, putting Charmel in the ankle lock. He admits his vice. Everyone's got vices. His vice is gutter sluts. And then there was an angle where he closes the locker room door with Charmel as Charmel screams. To insinuate what?
Some type of rape.
That's the feeling I got.
While the cameraman stands right outside.
And then Angle continues on with these just creepy promos saying he wants to have bestiality sex with Charmel.
And how does one achieve that? How do you have bestiality sex with another human being?
This straight from our good pal Alex Greenfield,
oh,
who was part of the writing team at the time, basically said during the meeting, someone brought up to Vince, I think you mean to say bestial sex. And Vince's reply was, bestial? Bestiality? What's the goddamn difference? And they went with bestiality sex because that's what Vince thought was the word that they should be using. Okay. So Kurt Angle wants to have sex with animals with Charmel. Would that be bestiality sex with Charmel?
Sure. Like, yeah,
with,
why
like
not?
With a hippo or something? I don't know.
Yeah, that's what I took it to mean.
This wasn't even the high point of the video package. Maybe. Then we got Kurt Angle via satellite claiming that Charmel that Charmel molested him.
Oh, God.
And in retaliation, he's going to break Booker's ankle and then give Charmel what she wants, and that is Kurt to dominate her. And it leads to Booker being so angry, he kicks a television monitor, and the final visual is smoke coming from the television monitor.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I kind of wish you had more questions for Alex, because I would have loved to have asked him and all the other people that we might know who were part of this writing team at the time what was going on here. Because this stuff, it felt like these lines were written by some high school nerd who just never got much attention from girls, okay? No offense, okay, if that was written. But I have a feeling it was somebody, a lot of this seemed like the Vince McMahon type of humor. You know what I mean?
This very much came across like that. And this is what I talk about, where it was like, we want to be edgy, but the audience doesn't respond to it as edgy. It comes across as just a pathetic attempt to shock. And the result was, this crowd was not really into this match.
Not at all.
Like, this whole point was to build up this big grudge feud, a guy defending his wife. And they were so repulsed by this that it just felt like I didn't even want to watch this. Yeah. It was like,
I felt offended. I actually did. But the other thing was, I mean, is Booker T supposed to be a babyface in this? Because the way he came across, yeah, his wife was being assaulted, but he just felt very unlikable in how he would get so angry, or not just get so angry, but just like he and Charmel, they came across really annoying and simply not very likable as babyfaces.
Oh, they were definitely the babyfaces here. It wasn't Kurt Angle who was the baby
face.
No,
it wasn't Kurt Angle.
But to me, this is the kind of storyline where it's like, man, if you ever have hopes of turning Kurt Angle, it's like, this is the kind of stuff that I think just was such a turnoff to people that try to get into this program, and this kind of angle just completely takes you out of it. Like, why do I watch this shit?
Sometimes I wonder if Kurt Angle being able to speak was even might have been a hindrance to him, because the guy is so technically good. But I think we saw that, oh, this guy can act, this guy can speak, let's put him in all these crazy storylines, rather than, you know, maybe have him be somebody like a Chris Benoit who couldn't pull off – just a weird thought. I'm just thinking of a Kurt Angle in this story – or Chris Benoit in this storyline instead of Kurt Angle.
Mr. Examples, waiting.
Which would be terrible. But what I'm just trying to say is I feel like if Kurt Angle wasn't so good at, you know, doing his comedy thing – he would have been taken a lot more seriously from the get-go.
And I think another thing with Kurt Angle is that from those that have worked with him, I mean, he is someone that just very much relied on the writers to write his material. And he was a guy that didn't really turn down stuff. Like, as it got thrown at him, he just trusted whatever was brought to him. And there's no way that some of the top stars in the business over the past 15 years – they would have torn up the script if this was given to them. It's like, my character's not doing this shit.
Well, there's always that saying that, you know, a good worker will take what he's given and turn it into the best thing that he could turn it into. Maybe that's what, you know, maybe that's how he felt. This is a challenge for me. How do I turn this?
All right. I'm a rapist with a a vengeful libido.
Loves animals.
For Booker's wife.
Yeah.
They cut to Booker and Charmel in the locker room, and Charmel tells him to take Angle out. He says, no one has ever disrespected me like this.
You see what I mean? Like, I don't feel like a baby face would necessarily talk like that. Like, a victimized baby face looking for sympathy would react that way. You know, that almost sounds like somebody who wants a negative reaction.
Well, then there was a knock on the door. And the delivery man came and gave a package to Charmel, who just casually opened up the package, and it revealed a pair of thongs. And what was Charmel's reaction? Oh, baby, you shouldn't have. As if Booker T would hire someone to deliver thongs here at the Target Center in Minneapolis. And there are handcuffs in this package And Booker reveals, I didn't get you these. Kurt Angle has bought all of this. And it ends with him saying, with Sharmell saying, baby, I need you to handle this sucker.
Oh, God. This is awful.
Match still to come. Paul London and Chavo Guerrero was next for the Cruiserweight Championship. Paul London, who sporting the tassels at this particular time. A little ode to Kerry Von Erich, perhaps. And very good match, I thought, between these two. There was a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker to London that Cole fumbled mixing up the body parts while describing. London hit a Hurricane Rana, then Chavo Guerrero came back on offense. London hit his drop salt, which was basically a drop kick and then like a backflip landing on his feet. He did a lot of spectacular stuff and looked very fluid in doing so. Goes for a 450. Chavo gets his knees up, and this would start with Chavo working over the ribs of Paul London and what offense he'd be able to use. And Taz really emphasized that throughout here. They used the abdominal stretch on London. Chavo stacks London, holds the rope, but London kicks out. Then London catches him with a spinning heel kick, climbs to the top, and Chavo goes to the floor. So London hits a somersault dive to the floor, which might not have been the best if you have injured ribs.
He landed right on the floor. Chavo didn't catch him at all here.
Chavo then hits a suicide dive to London, climbs to the top as they re-enter the ring, but London stops him on top. Chavo teases lifting up London like he would powerbomb him off the top, but instead Chavo gets back body dropped into the ring, and London hits the 450 splash at 10:41, retains the title. If you can get over the fact that the guy who was selling his ribs won the match with a 450, there was some impressive stuff in this match.
Good cruiserweight match, and yes, London's offense looked very impressive. I wonder if he's somebody who would have benefited more from this current era.
100% more.
Yeah, where like the smaller, high-flying guys with the indie cred seems to be sort of the hot thing right now.
You know, I say that though, but it's like they have someone very similar right now in Tyson Kidd who could easily fill that spot that a Paul London would have now. I think it's just once you've been on that roster for a certain amount of time, not only do the fans kind of put you in a level, but internally in the company – They slot you in at a certain level. So a lot of it is just timing. If Paul London was signed today and brought up in a year from now, yeah, you're right. Maybe he would be given a lot more focus. But he signed at a time in 2003 when it was just they just looked at him as a cruiserweight. And unfortunately, that was kind of a very small ceiling for him. Mm-hmm. Booker is looking for Angle backstage. You want to give my wife gifts? And he starts quizzing Funaki and Kidman about where Kurt Angle is. The best part here was he walked through a locker room where in the background there's a dude in a towel, pissing at the urinal on a cell phone with his towel on.
Wait, was he supposed to be there? Was this an extra?
I have no idea.
Who was the guy that he was talking to? In the locker room, the first guy.
Oh, I don't know who that was.
Yeah.
Didn't recognize him.
I couldn't recognize him.
There were a lot of faces that came in and out of WWE at that time. I don't recall.
He was in Wrestling Titan. I'm usually pretty good at picking out almost everybody there, but this guy, I couldn't tell.
Anyway, they all, hardcore's there. They all say if they see Angle, they will tell Booker he's looking for him. Cut to Sharmell, who's just standing by herself in a room. And up from behind comes Kurt Angle, rubbing her shoulders. This idiot thinks it's Booker.
Did you find him? Yeah!
I just
want to
tell you, Sharmell, I could find you anywhere, anytime. And after I beat your husband tonight, you're all mine. There's my music. I gotta go, baby. See you soon.
This is just the campiest acting here.
It's so bad. Like, anytime pro wrestling attempts, I'm sure, like, maybe in somebody's mind, this was, like, they're doing some Hollywood thriller, you know? Some really dramatic, terrifying, horrific thing that they can show. But when you shoot it in a pro wrestling style, with pro wrestling lighting, pro wrestling cameras, pro wrestling...
Under the guise that this is live. This is like a live sports presentation.
Like,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, and one take pro wrestling acting with people that aren't even real trained actors, it can't come across as anything but camp.
Charmel screams as Kurt puts her onto the couch on her back and gets on top of her. And the only thing that stopped a live rape from occurring on pay-per-view was Kurt heard his entrance music and had to get to the ring.
Oh.
Like, I am not overstating this fact that they were teasing a rape.
Oh, yeah. Or at least bestiality sex.
Bestiality sex. So there might have been a donkey coming.
Chipmunk somewhere. Yeah.
So Kurt had to run to the ring for his match with Booker T.
And what's Taz's response?
What did he say? I was
well,
just
think about
mystified.
It. You're Taz. There's somebody, your colleague in the back is getting sexually assaulted by another colleague as you're watching on cameras. His first response, this Kurt Angle sucks. That's what I would say.
He sucks.
Yeah.
He sucks.
If I saw this happen.
Sex offender. He sucks.
Yeah, he sucks.
Booker charges the ring. He is upset. He is upset about what this man has done to his wife.
And how is he going to retaliate?
He's going
to... Pinning his shoulders to the mat for a three count.
Angle started bleeding from the mouth very early here. Booker hits a drop kick to a seated Angle, but then comes back and attempts the ankle lock that Booker blocks. There is a scissors kick to Angle, who is draped on the top rope. Crowd is not into this. For all the time they put into this feud and... Man, this is going to make Kurt Angle the most hated villain in wrestling history. They did not care. A lesson to be learned when it comes to character traits that audiences will accept and reject.
Yes, I'm sure.
So anyway, Booker comes from outside the apron, sends Angle to the floor. Angle sends Booker into the steel post. They're brawling around. Booker gets crotched on the top rope. There's a suplex for a two count by Angle. Angle's mocking Booker as he works him over. There's a body lock. Then transitions to side control for a pin attempt. Didn't have the underhook, though.
Yeah,
or the bicep.
Sure.
Booker then starts his comeback with a spinning heel kick, a vertical suplex, a super kick. Then he misses the scissors kick, blocks an Angle slam, hits the bookend for a near fall. And didn't look like Angle had a very convincing kick out here. The crowd didn't know if this was the finish. And then, if this hadn't lost me, Booker T, after weeks of this man attacking your wife, trying to rape your wife, and you have now got your hands on him, Booker T, staring at his assailant 2 feet away, gets on one knee and does the spin a Rooney. Horrible.
This is so dumb. This is dumb. Even if they...
Is a grudge match that hard to put together?
Okay, yeah. Even if they had a great match, I still find it very hard to enjoy because I'm so offended by the tastelessness of the storyline.
The spin-a-rooney allows Angle to cut him off with a clothesline. Angle hits two Germans and a belly-to-belly suplex. Booker then counters an Angle slam into a roll-up and... Angle kicks out as the referee counts 3, and it's ruled the finish at 14 minutes and 10 seconds. This just felt like a... I don't know if they missed the finish or if this was planned.
I'm sure this was the finish. And it just seemed to me like they didn't want Kurt to lose completely clean. And that's ridiculous because even in the storyline with a guy beating up a sexual predator, you can't have him over clean.
He's got to stay. He's got to keep his heat.
Yeah.
His sexual predator heat.
So Booker wins, and all is well with the world.
Charmel runs down to the ring as Angle is attacking Booker, and he hits him with the Angle slam. Straps come down, tosses Booker to the floor, and then Angle grabs Charmel, and the handcuffs have made their way to the ring.
She brought them.
And goes to handcuff Charmel to the rope. But Booker makes his comeback, and he attacks Angle. And it ends up with Booker handcuffing Angle to the rope. And then Angle is in the corner. He's begging off. And in comes Charmel and starts slapping the shit out of Kurt, to which Cole pronounces, That's what happens to sick perverts, Kurt.
They lose wrestling matches, and they get tied up in the wrestling ring.
Booker and Sharmell leave together. Sharmell is in tears, as was I. And they show a slow motion recap of her kicking Angle low right in the thigh after the slaps. And Cole suggests that they keep Kurt Angle handcuffed and put him in Booker's locker room for Sharmell to have her way with him.
All right.
Based on the theme of this show, my God. And the crowd boos Angle as he leaves to the back.
Cops just, I guess, don't exist in Minneapolis.
Let's hear out Kurt. Let's see if maybe he's just misunderstood. Yeah. You know what this built to on the following SmackDown?
What's that?
There is a battle royal where the winning superstar would get a dream match of their choosing the following week on SmackDown. So all the big names are in it, and it comes down to Kurt Angle eliminating Rey Mysterio. And he says, next week, my dream match is me one-on-one with Sharmell.
Okay. And how did that go?
I don't know. Can't remember.
And I don't want to review it either. The WWE sanctioned this?
I guess so, yeah. They were fine with this.
All right.
They show Roberto Duran in the audience, and they tie in tonight's I Quit match with the famous No Mas match.
And Taz says,
I'm sure Roberto Duran had no idea that him attending the show and he was going to just get buried by these commentators all night long. Look, there's the quitter.
I'm sure he had no idea Taz was going to say, oh, yeah, there's Roberto Duran. He's an expert at quitting.
Like they could have keyed him.
Yeah.
Expert quitter.
Quitting expert.
Up next was Taz's keys to victory for the I Quit match. These are priceless. Number one was... right out of the box. Number two, pure persistence. And the best one, the best key to victory for the I Quit match. Don't quit.
Listen, Taz. Those are about as ridiculous, though, as some of the keys to victory that you see in the UFC shows. You know? When the guy just comes out and they put just stupid facts.
Up next was a United States title match involving Orlando Jordan defending the title against Heidenreich.
What, you sure you don't just want to skip this match?
I wanted to when I was watching this.
This is
on pay-per-view.
It's actually making me tired, the second half of the show.
Maybe it's that pre-match, pre-show banter
we had. I feel like I just hit a wall somewhere in the middle of this, the bestiality sex and this Heidenreich.
Took a lot out of people. Heidenreich does this stupid march to the ring, and he gets on the microphone before the match, breathing heavily, and he needs to find a new friend. And he finds Alex, who he says, that's a good name. So this kid has to sit ringside. I don't know if that was a punishment or a reward. Got to see this up close. He reads one of his disaster piece poems, where he refers to Orlando Jordan as whole wheat.
Instead of buckwheat.
Yeah. Jordan comes down, attacks him on the floor to start the match. Heidenreich catches him in midair, slams him for a two count. Taz says that Orlando Jordan is quite possibly the best athlete on SmackDown.
Possible, sure.
Possible? No.
Anything's
possible. He's pretending that we didn't just watch an Olympic medalist in the last match.
This guy could.
No, Orlando Jordan.
This guy could be better.
There's a back suplex by Orlando Jordan, gets a two count. This is just an atrocious match. Heidenreich starts marching around. He does like this Hulk up spot, begins a comeback. And then Jordan just hits him with a swinging neck breaker, gets a two count, and then a DDT, and he pins Heidenreich clean. So Heidenreich is dead in the ring, and Alex comes in, who they did constant cutaways to during the match, gives the thumbs down to Jordan, and then tends to a fallen Heidenreich and starts to do the march. As Heidenreich staggers up to his feet and joins Alex, who was probably the best worker of the three.
This match and, oh God, all this stuff before and after, I think reminded me why I stopped watching wrestling around this time.
This was it for you.
It was just, I just didn't have time for this. I don't even have the energy right now to talk about it.
Is the virus coming back?
It could be.
Josh Matthews is in the back with JBL, who's holding John Cena's WWE title, at least the old version, since they introduced the spinner after Cena won. Got a very good promo here. He said, "Lives do not change in a fight. They are broken. When you quit, you are no longer a man." It says, "I'm calling my shot like Babe Ruth. I will make John Cena bleed, and he will have to go back to his rap career and his movie career or run for governor of Minnesota because these idiots will vote for anybody."
Nice.
Really good promo from JBL.
Nice. Yep.
This was him at his heel best.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's a video for the Eddie Guerrero-Rey Mysterio match. Former friends who won the tag titles, and Rey Mysterio is getting beaten down by Eminem, and the announcers are yelling, "Where's Eddie?" And Eddie has to explain the next week that he had car trouble, and that's why he couldn't do the run-in save. And Mysterio accepts this apology, and it leads to a rematch with Eminem where Eddie won't tag in. And throughout this storyline, Chavo's playing the shit disturber, and Eddie finally turns on Rey, bloodies him up by tearing his mask and hitting a brain buster on the steps. And it led to what looked like a fantastic promo from Eddie featuring the line, "Don't make me take away their papa." Papa. So great.
Yeah.
Way more effective than a father or daddy.
Papa.
Your papa. Awesome. Yeah. I was ready for this match after this video. This was a great video package.
Oh, he's such a good heel.
I love this feud at the time. And this was also a feud that got very disturbing at times with Dominic involved.
Yep.
But Eddie was just so great in this.
Well, you look at that, this feud, and it is in direct contrast to the match that we just saw before, okay? They're both pretty serious issues, okay? On the one hand, you have sexual assault, sexual harassment. And on this one, somebody threatening, you know,
a child.
Children. And just look at the execution. Storyline aside, look at the execution of the match. That Booker angle match starts off like a regular match. Not like somebody who's wants to kill the other guy, stab the other person for assaulting his wife. This match, they stare at each other. The bell rings, they argue in Spanish, and then they just brawl. They just start beating the shit out of each other. And the reaction, I think, spoke for itself.
This feud, I mean, it's well remembered by people. And if I were to describe this storyline to people where it would come out that Eddie Guerrero had a fling with a chick, gave up Dominic for adoption to Rey, and it would culminate in a ladder match for custody of a child. That sounds ridiculous.
It does. Yeah.
But it's remembered very fondly, I think, because of the performances
That
you got out of this. Guerrero was a complete heel at this point, had new theme music, no more Lowrider. Mysterio comes out with his ribs all taped up, and they exchange words and slaps to start the match. Rey gets sent into the steps and the steel post early in the match, and Eddie is constantly breaking the count to remain on the floor. He drives Rey into the announce table, continues to attack the ribs of Rey, and then wears him down with an abdominal stretch, a single leg crab. Mysterio comes back, hits a springboard splash for a two count. The crowd got into everything that Rey did when he had this hope spot. Eddie then drop kicks his one knee out, applies a lion tamer, then into the traditional Boston crab, and eventually an STF. Guerrero's heel character is basically, he bends the rules right to the edge while staying within them. You know, not breaking till the count of five, just getting in as the count is about to expire on the floor. And he tosses Rey to the floor, doing that chest-first fall to the floor, lifts up the steps, and then kicks Rey down, knees him in the ribs, teases another brainbuster, but Rey blocks and drives Eddie back first into the post and hits a 619, wrapping himself around the post. Rey then gets stopped on the top rope. Eddie hits a superplex, only gets a two count, keeps going for pinfalls, can't get Rey, and this was when Cole was very good here, explaining how Eddie just can't beat Rey, and that's been his motivation since back before WrestleMania, the fact that he knows he can't beat Rey. And Eddie goes for the three amigos, but the last one is stopped by Rey, sends Eddie into the ropes. Chavo then shows up at ringside to distract Brian Hebner, And this allows Eddie to get a chair, but Ray stops him, drop kicks Chavo off the apron, hits a 619 to Eddie, and then as he goes for a springboard, Eddie grabs the chair in mid-ring and waffles Ray in midair for the DQ at 18 minutes, 31 seconds. And then afterwards, Eddie just beats down Ray with 5 chair shots. The agents get in to tend to Ray and break all of this up, and Eddie just walks up the aisle, pauses, just stops, and then continues to walk to the back. And then they cut to Ray being tended to, where we cut just in time for Ray to say on camera, it fucking hurts.
You know, it's never great to have a DQ finish on a pay-per-view, but for some reason, this felt like it made a lot of sense with the storyline. It just felt like, you know, fuck this, I can't beat this guy, I'm just going to whack him as hard as I can in the face with the chair. And that whack was so hard that you could almost feel a satisfaction from the perspective of Eddie Guerrero's character. I thought it was a really good match. From what I remember, I think I like this even better than the WrestleMania match. Outstanding performance by Eddie Guerrero. Both his in-ring work and his acting ability. Just even those facials and just how his
Eddie was at another level at this point.
His posturing. It just felt like every move that he delivered in the ring, every little mannerism he gave, was delivered with his character in mind. And I thought this was just a tremendous pro wrestler.
And think about the fact that these two would work each other at WrestleMania, this Judgment Day show, the Great American Bash show, and SummerSlam. I mean, this feud went a long time. And, yeah, along the way, you sometimes have to do finishes like this to keep it going. So I didn't really have a problem with it because it was, telling a larger story, and I thought both guys were really great in this. So then the video aired for the main event featuring the title change at WrestleMania 21. This was when John Cena had come out with his rap album, and we got the Bad Man music video with Bumpy Knuckles.
Was that the name?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway, the video airs, and then we get the elaborate entrances here. JBL comes out in his limo, and then Cena outdoes him by coming out on a semi-truck with a DJ mixing on the back of it, plugging the album. What product integration.
Yeah.
So we have these two vehicles that are just going to park themselves at the entrance, and this was just weird to hear a Cena chant. And that's it. Just people chanting Cena.
Yeah.
And the match begins with an exchange of headlocks, and JBL goes for a pin before he, I guess, remembered the stipulation of the match, or Taz's third key to victory. And Cole says, "You say I quit, you won't be able to live this down 5 years from now, 10 years from now. This will be like the scarlet letter on your career if you quit." And they fight into the crowd, featuring a swinging neck breaker on the concrete, which just looked painful. JBL whips Cena with a belt. He's choking him with it around the post, a very different era in WWE history. But then Cena pulls JBL's head into the steel post. They fight onto the table, and JBL goes for a powerbomb on top of the announce desk, but he gets back body dropped as a counter. And JBL goes through the Spanish table with his lower back, like, hitting the edge of the table. God, did this look bad. And the fact that this man would retire temporarily a year later with back problems, this was maybe a bad bump to be taken.
This was a major bump for somebody the size of JBL to take.
Yeah, big guy.
Yeah.
JBL then fires back with this huge chair shot to the head of John Cena, which busts him open and joining the Steve Corino Club of Good Bleeders.
Jesus.
Was John Cena.
All of a sudden.
Holy shit.
He was wearing like a red sweater, it looked like.
This, like, his chest was covered.
Jeez.
His forehead, like, if the lights were dimmed, you might not be able to tell that this man's white. Just seeing his face.
Yeah. Okay.
Like, his face was covered.
Yeah, it was covered, man. He looked like Kane. Like the old Kane.
He did.
This was definitely a TVMA amount of blood.
Wow. This was an unsightly visual, but did add to the match. You can't deny that.
Absolutely. For an I Quit match, you couldn't ask for a better blade job.
So the crowd is chanting here as JBL is beating down on Cena, choking him with a chain, just blood everywhere. JBL just playing this great bully. And Cena fights back with clotheslines, a 5-knuckle shuffle, face just completely red from the blood, hits the FU, and then JBL gets to the floor, gives him the middle finger, and walks up the aisle. Cena stalks him, suplexes him onto the hood of the limo, and another swinging neck breaker, this one onto the hood of the limo. JBL then puts JBL headfirst through a television monitor, and JBL comes out of the monitor. Now he's bleeding all over the place.
Where are they getting all these spare TVs that they could just use in their sets?
It was a prominent time in 2005, I guess.
It's the transition to HD.
It was. They were slowly whittling away the standard equipment. They then fight on top of the limo. Both are bloody. Cena hits a vertical suplex on the roof of the limo. Cena then sends JBL into the open limo door twice and then breaks the limo door off.
They tried very hard for the Irish whips to break it, but it wasn't breaking. So Cena just Superman pulls it off.
Ripped it off. And didn't even use the door again. Just wanted to break it off for the fact that he could do it. Cena hits him with the microphone as JBL is standing on top of a speaker on the semi where the mixing table was, and then gets tossed through that table. And this is where Cena rips off the smokestack from the truck. And as he lifts up the smokestack, JBL's back is against these glass windows with the Judgment Day logo on them by the entrance. And JBL grabs the microphone, and before Cena hits him with the smokestack, JBL quits. Like the total coward. This comes at 22 minutes, 44 seconds of the match. And JBL points to his head like, I'm smart here. I am going to quit before I get pummeled with this smokestack. But no, after the match, Cena runs at JBL, hits him with the smokestack, and JBL goes through the glass. And to get a visual, these are kind of like the setups that Kurt Angle and Shane McMahon had at the King of the Ring last year, or in 2001.
It's purely put there for somebody to go through.
Exactly. And Cena ends by going into the ring, poses with both titles as the pyro goes off for this big spectacular visual to go off the air with. A tremendous match between these two. I think many would look at this as, Cena's had a lot of great matches. This was probably one of, if not JBL's best match ever.
This was a lot of fun, and it definitely exceeded all my expectations going into it, because the two of them just worked a great match. And the blade jobs from both men, like JBL, let's not discount the fact that, you know, he had a pretty good Muda level blade job going himself too. But just even that, a lot of the brawling in and outside the ring, and all the props that they seem to have set up in advance. Like the cars with the worked windows for glass for people.
This is like
break.
An obstacle course.
It felt like a video game. And, you know, like you throw a guy into the thing, and then the thing, smoke comes out of the CO2 canister.
Yeah, we didn't even mention the CO2 canister. That looked extremely dangerous when they hit it, and all the shit, this fucking carbon's coming out of it.
So there's that. There's a TV with the. That looked kind of funny. But like,
I was waiting for a rocket launcher.
Iris rip your opponent into the TV, and he goes headfirst through the screen. Checking the reception, like all that stuff. It made for a really fun and very violent match. So.
There should have been health meters on the screen.
There should have, yeah.
So a main event that so over-delivered at the time. I mean, their WrestleMania match was pretty flat. There were not high expectations for this match, and it was tremendously well-received. I would go so far as to say it was the best match on the show, even ahead of Eddie and Ray.
I think I would, too. I definitely would. And don't you ever feel like, you know, man, if only they had had this match at WrestleMania, like, we would still be talking about this match today, I think.
Yeah, the problem was, I mean, WrestleMania was so built around Hunter and Batista that I don't think they would have wanted anyone to have to follow that. Imagine following this.
Oh, yeah.
If this was, like, second from the top at WrestleMania, would have been very difficult to do.
But as it stands, I mean, yeah, I think people might mention it as maybe JBL's match, but I think it's largely forgotten, this match.
Yeah, to a degree, it is. But a great match on a just strange pay-per-view. I mean, there was the best and worst of WWE at this time showcased on this pay-per-view. And an undercard that's somewhat overlooked. I mean, a good tag match. London and Chavo was fun. Eddie and Ray was really good. I couldn't get an Angle and Booker at all. It just seemed like a waste of especially Kurt Angle. This was his first match, big match at least, his feud coming out of that Shawn Michaels match at WrestleMania. It just seemed like doing shit with Kurt for the sake of it.
That was terrible. But you had, a good opener, a good London travel match, and I thought the last two matches were very strong.
I give this show a 7.5 out of 10, mainly for Guerrero, Rey, and the main event. And you're right. The tag was good opener.
They were okay. They were fine.
They were fine. Good opener.
But if you're going to watch the show, just watch the last two. And if you really care, watch the Kurt Angle recap. Ridiculous recap.
Just
video.
You need to watch it just to live that feud down.
I give it a 7 out of 10.
All right. Well, let's hear right now from the man who, to many, stole the show at Judgment Day 2005. Here is a young John Pollock with a young John Cena. Two Johns chatting about Judgment Day 2005. This took place just days after this pay per view and the I Quit match.
Did you feel the finish? Because I know some people would think it was a little anticlimactic. You guys went through this whole war, and then JBL just quitting like that right at the end. Did you think it was a bit of an anticlimactic finish to it, or were you happy with the finish?
You know what? I haven't even had a chance to see it back. It's been one of those things where, as far as somebody going through punishment, I think I went through a little bit more punishment than JBL.
Right, yeah.
He just reached a stopping point.
Right, so, yeah.
If you guys haven't seen SmackDown, son of a bitch.
We read spoilers up here.
Okay, when you read spoilers, you'll be able to see that JBL comes out and cuts a promo and says he may not have been totally cooked, but he was trying to live to fight another day.
Right, right.
He was explaining that, he came out and gave me my respects, which I didn't expect, but it was a hell of a promo that he cut there. But he also he explained that, you know, he wants to be around for a long, long time, and he seems to think that I'm only going to be around for a couple of years at the rate that I was going on Sunday.
Yeah, great.
Blood left.
Yeah, because that was just Mick Foley, King of the Deathmatch blood you had going there.
Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, but total congratulations. We were getting calls all night on the radio show that night. We are right after the pay-per-view saying, you know, that was Cena's best match of his career.
Yeah, so. it's a lot of people, because I'm so entertainment-focused, a lot of people question my passion for the business. They question my, my ability in the ring. I entertain so much. I'm very similar to like the Terrell Owens of the WWE. I talk so much shit, or like the Allen Iverson. I talk so much shit that a lot of times that overshadows performance. And at the end of the day, I would give a lot of my blood for this business.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm just glad that we could really, you know, really just have it out on Sunday. Really just beat the holy hell out of each other. And, you know, I'm very glad with how it came out.
Yeah, and people can look at, you know, work rate and stuff in the ring, but at the end of the day, you're the most over performer on SmackDown right now. The pops are huge. And, I mean, you look at someone like Hogan, who along with Austin, Hogan will never be confused with Chris Benoit. But
but at the same time, I mean, it's just sometimes it hurts a little bit for somebody to question, motives or passion or anything.
Oh, absolutely.
Especially in today's day and age where it is big business. And it's just one of those things where Sunday was kind of like me saying, I'm going to be here for a long time, and I'm going to give whatever I got to give for the company.
Yeah, well, it was an excellent performance, I thought. Moving forward now, do you think the JBL feud has now kind of reached its end? Because they're starting to tease the Christian feud over on Raw.
Man, my name is being brought up all over the place.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I've been on SmackDown since I've been to WWE. I was on Raw once. That was for the draft of last year, and I was wearing SmackDown blue. I don't know what tomorrow's going to bring. All I know is my name is being brought up by a lot of people who I can't fight back against. So they seem to be talking like Bischoff, Shelton, Christian seems to be talking about me a lot. I'm not even going to pay it any mind right now, because I'm not going to give a performer that's on another program shine on my program. You know what I'm saying? On our program, because people won't be able to see us mingle. You know, if it was next to one of the big four, maybe I'd give him some shine, but I'm not going to, because it's not going to go anywhere right now.
Yeah.
Between me and John Bradshaw Layfield, some bitch quit. I don't know where else we can go.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I really don't know where else we can go. I think it's time for him to take a back burner with his little obsession he's got with the WWE title and let somebody else step up.
You mentioned that last week that somebody made a comment to John Cena at the office.
Yes, one of our executives at the time decided to. He did not like the finish of the I Quit match, and basically said, "Why'd you guys do that finish? I didn't like it." And John Cena was pretty polite and just saying, "Well, if the Fight Network's own here doesn't think that that was a good finish, then I guess it wasn't. And what do I know? Basically was his tone.
Oh, boy.
It was. What did you think of the finish?
I like the finish.
At the time, there were people that hated it because it was just such a anticlimactic finish to it. But, you know, I kind of like the, you know, this big coward just at the end of the day quitting. And you still did get that big kind of spot at the end with the smokestack and the glass if you were hoping for that.
I thought it was fine and realistic because, I mean, so often in these I Quit matches, you kind of get painted into a corner where it's going to be a little anticlimactic to have a guy. I mean, the idea is that, you know, for an exciting finish is for it to come out of nowhere. But it's in an I Quit match, you have to do the big spot first. And then bring the mic to the guy and have him speak, which is, I don't know. It doesn't. I actually didn't mind this at all for an I Quit match. I thought it was nice and realistic.
I think it worked for the JBL character as well. And I think that even if under normal circumstances, maybe you wouldn't be down with that kind of a finish, I think people were so forgiving after the match you had just seen. Match. Very hard to say anything bad about that match for what it was promised and what was delivered.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to get to the message board questions, but first, here's a few minutes with Dave Meltzer, who was on The Law that night, just about an hour or so after Judgment Day wrapped up with Dan the Mouth Lavransky.
We'll start off, obviously, with the Judgment Day pay-per-view tonight. Very interesting show. Super hot crowd for most of it. But some really strange finishes.
Yeah. I mean, well, maybe the main event finish was really strange. I think that JBL wanted to do a finish to where, you know, at the end, you know, he's been bragging for a year about how there's no quit in him. And I think he wanted to come off like, you know, like the real pussy who, you know, when he was about to get hit by something, he quit first.
Wow. It just seems so anticlimactic after the match had been so intense.
I mean, it was, well, I'll say this, when I was watching it, I was going like, wow. You know, my initial reaction to the finish was wow, but then when I started thinking about it, it's like, I see what he's doing. I give them a lot of credit because, I mean, the card up until the main event was like exactly what I expected. I kind of expected maybe Kurt Angle's match to be slightly better, but, you know, it's largely what I expected. And then that main event was like 1,000 times better than I thought.
Yeah, the main event, I think, surprised everyone. And plus, they were lucky. They had a super hot crowd with them, too.
Yeah, and they had a lot of, they worked on that main event. I mean, you can tell that, you know, the company clearly was afraid of that main event, and they gave them every prop in the world to work through. And,
right.
But, I mean, it worked. I mean, you know, I'd seen those guys a week ago in a regular match, and it wasn't pretty.
Right.
It was worse than the WrestleMania match.
Yeah, no, and this match really was a very, very good match. What, you mentioned the Angle Booker T match. That finish, to me, looked botched. Like, have you heard anything, Dave?
I haven't heard, because it looked like the ref didn't think that, or the ref counted three and Angle kicked out or something.
Yeah, well, that was it. There was somebody. Yeah, somebody counted three. Somebody kicked out. They both kind of looked at each other. It looked to me like the match ended too soon.
Yeah, I thought so too. Because, you know, Angle never even used an ankle lock the whole match, right?
Yeah, yeah. And plus the fact that the timing for everything else on the rest of the show seemed like there seemed like there should have been more time for that match there.
But they could have picked it up later. Yeah, because the show ended 10 minutes early.
Uh huh.
And yeah, I it just seemed they were just getting into the match. I mean, knowing
well, that's the thing. That finish, what they did, the way they did it, kind of came out of nowhere. That couldn't have been the right finish.
Yeah. I think I thought that was looked kind of weird. Like the Guerrero finish with Mysterio, I understood what that was all about in the sense of, you know, we're not going to give you a pinfall. You're not going to, you know, we're going to leave Eddie with heat, and you know, we're not going to let Eddie beat him either, and you know. The match was what I expected, I guess.
I liked the Eddie Ray match, but again, and I understand what you're saying about the booking in terms of that, but I thought after how good and how intense the match was, the cheap DQ finish I didn't like.
Yeah, a week ago I had seen a similar, you know, it was a low blow, not a chair shot.
Right.
Springboard into it, I'd seen a similar finish. And the first time I saw it, this was better than the house show finish, because the house show finish I thought was terrible.
Right.
Even though it's similar, this was a lot better match, though.
Oh, it was. I think they definitely redeemed themselves from WrestleMania. I thought the two of them had a great match tonight.
Yeah, I thought so. Most of the stuff was good. I wish that the M&M match got about 5 more minutes.
Right, because the crowd was really into them.
Yeah, well, you know, they had a better match I saw when I saw the house show, but Charlie Haas was so much better this time.
Right.
I mean, He was really fired up. I mean, he rarely connects as a babyface, and he really did.
And even they were even chanting for Hardcore Holly. When's the last time you heard that?
Yeah, well, Hardcore Holly gets over with those guys. I don't know exactly what it is. The chemistry works. Hardcore Holly and Johnny Nitro works because I think people see Johnny Nitro as this punk.
Right.
And they know Hardcore Holly's a bully, but they want to see someone bully the guy.
Right.
You know, so it works there. I mean, but they, you know, that team needs like a real tag team to be like feuding with, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely, for sure. So overall, with thumbs up, thumbs down?
I got to give it a thumbs up. I mean, you know, the Big Show match wasn't particularly good. The
no.
High rank match was absolutely horrible.
Wow.
But at least it was short.
Yeah, I mean, those are what we expected, you know,
Yeah, it was. I mean, I didn't expect that.
I think, like I said, a couple of the finishes threw me, but by no means did I expect JBL and Cena to put on such a good dramatic match as they did.
Yeah, I mean, especially Cena. I mean, both of them. I don't think I've ever seen JBL in a match that good, but I know I've never seen Cena.
Exactly.
In a match good.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so there you go. That was Dave Meltzer from that night on The Law, his fresh perspective of Judgment Day 2005. So let's start off with feedback. We'll go to Jeremy Samples first. These older shows, although not even 10 years yet, feel so weird to watch after being desensitized during the PG era. The bloodbath of Cena and JBL just didn't feel right with some unbelievable spots. And then for the match to end with Cena and the pipe off his truck just felt like a letdown. This was the only spot I remembered from watching the show in real time, and I still felt the same way today. Booker T looked like an idiot trying to find Kurt right before the match. Just stay with your wife, protect her, and wait a minute. The look in Kurt's eyes when his music hit was amazing, and I could see him feeling that way each time his music hits. That's my music. On a side note, it would have been hilarious to see Mick Foley try to superkick a TV instead of using his baseball bat in the Daniel Bryan drama. I thought it was interesting that Carlito used Randy Moss as the hometown heat. Randy went to my college, Marshall University. This was the first time he left the Vikings, although the second time he left, it was over the food. I wouldn't feed Minnesota slop to my dog. Maybe they were trying to feed him a few of Carlito's poisoned apples. Also, it's always a plus to get to see Eminem on a show. Add a point. 8 Molina entrances out of 10, he says.
Christian Small. Does Kurt have some hidden issues or something? He gets given these rapist gimmicks, and he would get it again during his time, I believe, in TNA. What's more amazing is that Kurt recovers from these angles and brushes them off like they didn't even exist. Guerrero and Mysterio had its highs and lows during that feud, but never really in the ring, I felt. Never really in the ring. Okay. I loved Eddie in his final year, and I know he had a lot of issues, but you rarely ever saw them when it came to his work. Cena versus JBL made up for their awful Mania match with this one. This felt like Cena's crowning moment, whereas Mania just felt a little flat. It is odd going back and seeing such violent bloodbaths as it was pretty great in my view. Sorry, I don't have my glasses. So
you can
how do I enlarge this? We're professionals here. There we go. Thank you.
Let's go to Liam from Bristol. I thought Judgment Day 2005 was one of the best SmackDown brand shows since their first year. Since then, the SmackDown-branded pay-per-views from Judgment Day 04 to No Way Out 05 were pretty much garbage. JBL versus Cena's match of the night without a question, and I thought it was kind of scary that Eddie passed away 6 months later in this city of Minneapolis. That's right. As for Kurt Angle and Booker T's feud, well, is it possible, as in a request for next week's review, to go to the... Well, this was where he mentions the Kurt Angle, Charmel... Apparently it would be... Kurt Angle against Charmel and Hardcore Holly on that SmackDown. No, we won't be going to review that. Sorry, Liam.
Andrew from Michigan. First of all, thanks for all the shows, Wei and John. I started listening a couple of months ago and I'm hooked. The thing that always stuck out about this event was Kurt Angle's interactions with Booker and Charmel. I can picture Vince laughing at this ridiculous story while everyone else is uncomfortable and too scared to question him. Thankfully, this was Kurt's only sexually aggressive feud. JBL Cena was great and showed what I Quit matches were before PG. I also really enjoyed Eminem against Holly and Haas. Overall, a mixed bag show with some great things, but some very awkward things.
Aram from Denmark. Quite the memorable pay-per-view for a few reasons. Mysterio-Guerrero match that I remember being great. I did, however, never really dig the Dominic storyline. Orlando Jordan Heinrich, probably the worst U.S. title match ever on a pay-per-view. I was always surprised that WWE didn't test out Orlando's wild side in a program, considering all the other buttons they have pushed. What has happened to both Orlando Jordan and Heinrich nowadays? An interview with either one would be great. Pretty much both out of the industry now. I know that Heinrich did a He did some independence for a while. He actually, a few months after this, when Hurricane Katrina hit, his house was like affected by that because he lived in New Orleans. But neither are really doing much now in terms of active wrestling.
All right. We go to Josh from England, who says, I wanted to address something that Wei and John seem to be bringing up a lot lately. I'm normally too tired to talk about it at 4 a.m. on a Monday, so maybe this is the place. I wanted to discuss the argument that John constantly makes about nostalgia today in wrestling and how fans in 10 years' time may look at events like Jeff Hardy being unable to wrestle in a main event of a TNA pay-per-view as the good times, and I just wanted to say that this will never be the case. Even today, there are no fans who look back at 2008 when Mike Adamley was GM and say how great it was. They talk about the Attitude Era. In 10 years, if TNA exists, they will talk about the three way between Joe Daniels and AJ as the best time in the company, and will continue to look at the Attitude Era as the greatest time in the company as opposed to the Triple H Randy Orton days.
I think he's kind of missing the point. I've never used those examples specifically. Yes, you're bringing up some of the shittiest moments over the past couple of years. My point is that I think generally things get looked upon much more fondly as time continues, and that average things in real time become more well-remembered once time passes by. That was my point that I was trying to make at that time. Sean from New Jersey. I'm sure most people mainly remember the show for the blood-soaked I Quit match. Not the best I Quit match, but it had some cool spots. You have to wonder if the back body drop through the Spanish announce table may have been the start of JBL's back issues, which led to him retiring a year later. Best match on the show was arguably Eddie and Ray. These two had great in-ring chemistry, and Eddie's heel persona was fantastic. Just the subtle things he would do and his facial expressions were pure gold. I really wish he could have had a longer run with this schizophrenic heel character. For me, the highlight of the show was the Kurt Angle Booker T storyline. Even though it was tasteless and wrong, I found Kurt Angle's promos hysterical. Just the implication of Olympic gold medalist wanting to rape Booker T's wife on live television is truly ridiculous. It's to the point where it's so bad that it becomes funny.
We go to Caesar, who says, this was the first pay-per-view I ever watched after becoming a fan 7 months prior to the show. One thing I enjoyed about WWE at this time was how separate the brands were and how they got their own shows. It made SmackDown stand out and was a show that you can watch every week because they had their own stars and storylines. However, some of their pay-per-views weren't the best, as each show had some great stuff and equally some uninteresting stuff, such as this pay-per-view. Two great matches on the show. Eddie and Ray always had fantastic chemistry in the ring. I really enjoyed the feud at this time, as it featured a great heel turn from Eddie a month ago, and Eddie began cutting great heel promos leading into this match, and I was definitely interested in it. This match was great and may have been one of my favorites. The Cena-JBL match was great as well. They didn't have a good match at WrestleMania 21, so they needed a gimmick, and this was a great gimmick to add to the match. They sort of don't do these types of matches anymore because of the PG era, yet I was only 8 years old at the time of this event, and I thought it was the greatest thing I had ever seen. Now it's just a great match. What I like about this match is how competitive it was. I hate how Cena's I Quit matches today are always the same formula. Heel destroys Cena for 20 minutes, Cena wins 3 minutes later. A month later, Cena would be on his way to Raw, and the older fans' bad side, so it sounded strange hearing Let's Go Cena without Cena sucks.
David Duffenberg, first time checking out this show, and I have to say I was pretty entertained. The opener was surprisingly good, considering I completely forgot Haas and Holly ever teamed together. I may be in the minority, but I actually enjoyed the ending of the main event. JBL always had that chicken shit part of his character, and it completely made sense to me that he'd quit to try saving his own ass. Plus, the crowd still got to see a vicious finish afterwards. I watched this on the network, and did you guys notice how this was rated M? Definitely fit that rating. As much as I enjoy a good blade job, that was borderline scary, and of course the rape storyline makes everyone feel uncomfortable. I still give this show a 7 out of 10.
Finally, from Berserko, who says, when it comes to the main event, all Cena does for the most part is bleed. It's just as well, considering how little Cena is able to do well. But the blood also goes a long way in giving the match a big match sort of feel to it. It was something, which was something it really needed as the headlining match, and also considering the fact that Cena's title win at WrestleMania 21 was only 11 minutes long. The ending with JBL quitting in order to stop Cena from using an exhaust pipe as a weapon doesn't come off nearly as well as it was intended to. Sure, Cena was doing some crazy spots, but it was just that. Cena doing spots. The spectacle and at times brutality of the match make it enjoyable to watch, and it'd be easy to get swept up in the action. But SmackDown has always been the WWE brand known for good wrestling, and watching Cena here is a good reason why he was soon moved over to Raw. Overall, I give the show 7 John Cena getting random pyro at the end of a B show out of 12.
I thought Cena was, yeah, I mean, he's not, you know, he's not going to wrestle a technically marvelous match, but I thought for his role he
did.
I think John Cena typically gets a lot of flack, and when you look at his body of work, of some of the matches he's had over his career, I mean, he's had some pretty spectacular matches, and it's not always because of the guy that's opposite him in the ring. So that's going to wrap things up. Judgment Day, interesting show to go back and watch. And next week, Wei and I are going to stay on the WWE Network, but we are going to go as far away from Judgment Day as we might be able to on the network. We're traveling back to 1982. This might be our oldest review we've ever done. I don't think we've ever done anything pre-1984.
Really?
That's not true. I'm sure we've... I think I Like to Hurt People was in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is pretty old, is what I'm trying to say. We are going to be reviewing a show that I've become a big fan of watching on the network because it's available for the first time for someone like myself. We are going to review the December 14th, 26th, and December 28th editions of World Class Championship Wrestling.
From what year?
From 1982. So if you have the network, you can go back and watch these three episodes. They are episodes number 52, 59, and 54. Okay, that doesn't make sense. December 14th, December 26th, and December 28th, 1982. And why these shows? Because it coincides with perhaps the most, I don't even think perhaps, I think it was the most well-remembered angle in the history of World Class, and that was the infamous Christmas Day turn by the Freebirds on the Von Erichs, when Ric Flair defended the NWA Championship against Kerry Von Erich at Reunion Arena.
I'm really excited to watch this because, I mean, I know you've become just a big fan of it on your personal time, and you always talk about how the production techniques at the time were kind of very unique to the show compared to a lot of what it was in pro wrestling at the time. So I'm interested to watch this for those reasons.
Yes. Don't go into this expecting, 2014 production. But think of this, in 1982. It's something to watch. And just the structure of a different territory's weekly television show, especially at a time where the territory was about to explode with this angle. So three episodes of World Class Championship Wrestling next week is what we will discuss. And for those of you that heard the run-in from Damian Abraham earlier in the show, 2 weeks from now we will be reviewing something Ring of Honor related. We'll let you know what next week.
We'll compare the production values between today's Ring of Honor show and World Class Championship Wrestling.
Yes.
1982.
I don't know which one might impress us more. Yeah. So we're going to find out. To go on out of here, Wade, do you have a song in mind to put a bow on Judgment Day 2005. Oh, I know what you're going
to
say.
I'm trying to think of all the bestiality songs I might know, and I don't know if I know any.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to pick like a Nirvana song.
Why?
For another theme to that particular storyline.
No. What are you talking about?
Never mind. Well, folks, in the meantime, you can go to liveaudiowrestling.com.
Yeah. Well, let's go with that.
At Wei0937, at I am John Pollock. I feel much like that storyline. It's going to make people uncomfortable.
No, it won't. It's a great song.
Okay. Maybe we can find a remix of it to add some humor.
No, no. No more remixes. No more dubstep remixes.
No, the dubstep did not go over well.
It wasn't even dubstep. It was just bad.
Well, that's what dubstep is.
No, it's all right dubstep.
Is there any good dubstep?
Yeah. What? I mean, I'm not even a huge fan of it, but I like some of it.
It seems the height of dubstep was that cinema song. Remember that they used for the WWE Network once? And that got like commercial play.
Was that the most popular dubstep song?
I think it was, honestly.
I don't know. I wasn't really into the scene, but I like some of that stuff.
There was actually a good Goche dubstep version.
I don't know if you need versions of anything, okay? Like,
I disagree. I like different variations of songs. I like to hear acoustic versions, live versions, dubstep versions, rap versions.
Lovely. So let's go out then with some electronic remix of Nirvana.
Oh, I actually have a dance remix of Smells Like Teen Spirit that I once played for my friend who nearly slapped me and was so upset that this even exists.
Okay, but not Smells Like Teen Spirit. We got to go out with this song.
Oh, a dance remix of this?
Yeah.
Okay. We'll chat with you next week.
Rave me, my friend. rape me, rape me again. Rape me, rape me.